What is not being covered?
We have 10 seconds.
Responses of parents who realize that this attack on history is an attack on their children's future. And that's what we're going to be talking about in CRT summer school.
And people can still sign up even though it's this week?
And they can sign up, and it will be on demand until Labor Day.
We have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Kimberly Crenshaw, professor of law at UCLA and Columbia. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Wear a mask.
You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. This program has been brought to you today by the Tom Pastilio and Mickey Conlon team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, hosts of the Jazz Loft Summer Music Series in Stony Brook Village. The Tom Pastilio and Mickey Conlon team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate may be reached at tomandmickey.com. We thank them for their support of WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. The time is just about 6 o'clock. It's a Tuesday evening. Time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yep.
Playing with the volume control. I just discovered it. It's a lot of fun. Or you can just make it go away altogether.
Yeah, but nothing but us.
Yeah, that's not pleasant.
No, just ease him into that.
Yeah. Well, how you liking the heat?
It is warm.
It's warm, and humid, but it's nothing compared to what's going on in Europe right now, where, you know, the media is getting this wrong. They say that Europe is having triple numbers in temperature. And they don't get triple digits in Europe because they use a Celsius scale. So right away, they're better off. You know, we get 100 degrees, they get 35 or something like that. And it might not be very comforting to you right now, but it's all we got. Yeah, it's hot everywhere. It seems to be hot everywhere.
Yeah, so that's part of the framing and the comforting that Americans are used to. But yeah, that is an uncomfortable thing. The way it displaces everyday activities that are necessary, that are otherwise normal, it just gets really difficult. And you have to watch out for people and absolutely stay hydrated. Find water if you can.
Mm-hmm. That goes for your animals as well.
Yeah, take care of them fully. And don't exert yourself. It can be tempting to be more active, but take breaks. Take a siesta.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with that. Try and get into cool areas, shady areas. There are a lot of natural ones. Taking a walk in the woods can be really comforting sometimes.
It's the really foundational aspect of the trees being taller than us and us being able to walk through and under their cover. That's a brilliant aspect of enjoying taking in parks, scenic areas. Absolutely.
Going to the beach and taking a dip in the water before being attacked by sharks. Yeah, that's happening all over the place. There's sharks in the water. Well, not the North Shore, I don't think. Has there been a single... No, I'm told there hasn't been a single shark in the North Shore. Another reason why the North Shore is better than the South Shore. And I know we're going to get all the letters from the South Shore listeners. I know, and a signal's better over there, too. So you get us, but you also get the sharks. And that's a problem. The reason, though, is that the waters are cleaner because, you know, actually people's efforts have resulted in something. But I know there are people who are going to say, see, that proves it. That proves that environmentalism is the enemy and we have to make more pollution so that the sharks go away. You know, you laugh, but give it 5 years. That will be the argument of a political party. I won't say which one, but you can figure it out.
Well, we will have faster swimmers as a result of all of this.
they're going after the lifeguards for some reason. I guess because they go in the water a lot. You know what? Make it so lifeguards don't have to come in and rescue you and they won't get attacked by sharks. Everybody can have fun. Although I guess regular people would get attacked by sharks then too. But they don't move around as much. Maybe that's what's attracting them.
Yeah, I think there's also, like you said, the seal populations and the things that they live on, they're finding are in abundance. And
is that what it is? There's more seals?
Well, I'm just pointing out that, you know, don't behave like a seal because you have to have...
Good advice for any day, Kyle.
Well, I'm always thinking of, you know... Good tips on
writing that down. Don't behave like a seal.
Lifestyle choices. Yeah, that is one of them because otherwise you might be mistaken. And it's not really about the sharks, you know, having a particular thing against the spaces where humans are being active. But, you know, you have to have a reverence for how you use the space that is essentially their habitat. We're sort of borrowing it. I don't know. I don't see that many land sharks. They're... have been sightings.
Land sharks? What's a land shark? You don't know either, do you?
Let's stick to the story. It's about being in the sea and having reverence and respect for that body of water and that there are species in there that they could be mistaking you for prey. So look out.
So don't paddle around when you're in the water. Don't.
Well, stay in designated swimming areas. You know, pay attention to the shark weather and the whatever kind of hazards they report. You know, they have a symbol system when you're at the beach. But there's other spaces too. You go out and enjoy a bicycle trail. There's a lot of bicycling. And that is a way to be 5 times more efficient and still stay active. And you get a nice, well, I guess in this case, a less warm breeze as you pedal along. So take advantage of that, too.
Okay, a land shark can refer to a German Shepherd dog and can also refer to a pit bull. I've never heard it referred to that way, but that's what a land shark is. According to Wikipedia, a German Shepherd dog, which is a dog breed, I think we all know that, and pit bull, a dog breed. And the third definition is a speculator in real estate. So those three things. There's no actual shark out there. It's a recurring SNL character, but that nothing to worry about here.
Maybe, you know, all of the above? Yeah. Yeah,
suggesting I look at sand shark. I'm going to go over there now.
And boiler rooms.
Okay, sharks are also known as sand tiger sharks, gray nurse shark. Why would you call it a nurse shark? Or ragged tooth shark. That's a good name. They're mackerel sharks of the family, which I can't possibly pronounce, and they're found worldwide in temperate and tropical waters. So they're still in the water, so nothing to worry about.
Well, there's a lot of biters out there, so... Beware the biters.
All right. So anyway, getting back to the heat, you know, it's hot. And this is our assignment now for the hour. How do we figure out a way to take this heat and blame it on Biden? That's what we need to do.
Wait, why do we need to do that?
Because everyone's doing it. Everyone's blaming Biden for every little thing. So I figure why not join in the fun and figure out a way that this is his fault? Because, you know, every day on the news, it's all because of Biden. Everything. All of it.
It would have you believe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But you have to do some of your own mental, like, I don't know, contextualizing. I would, you know, take some of it worth a grain of salt. Who's really to blame is, I think, not so cut and dry.
For the heat.
Yeah. I mean... I don't know. There's a lot of different ways. I don't want to get into all kinds of, ways things are all interrelated and so forth. And, what is the point of it all? Why should we have growth? What, is civilization about? Why do we, what is existence? Where are we and where did it start? And then... up through the Industrial Revolution and so forth. But, you know, it's just an hour show. So, I mean, we'll take where the conversation leads us.
Okay, well, I want to figure out a way to blame them because people are so good at that for all sorts of other things. Inflation, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Global inflation. You know, prices are skyrocketing in Canada. They're skyrocketing in England. They're skyrocketing all over Europe. They're skyrocketing in Australia. Cost of living going way up. Basically the same problems we're having here, except worse in many places. But somehow it's Biden's fault.
Well, it's simpler to blame it on an individual or a leader, right?
Uh-huh.
It's that takes all the work out of making up something like I just said, or having actual pithy academic conversations or a real process and proactive kind of deconstruction of what's at play here. But yeah, it's a rough time, and I think a lot of it really just lays bare a lot of exactly why change and evolving are good things. And
who's changing? Who's evolving?
I'm saying that's the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And, when we don't, we just see more of the status quo, and that's, perfectly clear.
Well, fuel prices are the thing that everybody is freaking out over. I was looking at, some footage from a couple of years ago, And, you know, gas prices were in the $3 and change range. You know, I look at other things that people pay for, and that's about the realm of inflation, that things go up by a certain amount. And we pay artificially low prices for fuel in this country, as opposed to even places like Canada right next door. We've gotten used to that. And now, as a result of the war in Ukraine and the economy, the global economy that you know, we referred to, these prices are going to go up. That's just, how do you avoid that? How do you prevent that? I don't see any way to do that unless you live in some kind of a fantasy world and you you basically just fund all these oil companies and artificially make the price lower, subsidize it. And not doing that, I don't think makes you the problem. I think the problem is that we've gotten used to paying much less than we should be paying for fuel in the first place. But this rise, this is the result of global events. There's no getting around that. And it's easy to point the finger and say it's this person's fault. But, okay, for instance, here's a headline. Gas prices fall below $4.50 a gallon, 2-month low. All right, well, then if it's his fault, then this should be something that he gets credit for. But he doesn't. when it goes the other way, no, you're not responsible for that, because those are other factors. Those are other things going on. It just seems like a very simplistic way of always pointing the finger at the guy who's in charge and saying everything is because of them, not taking into account all the craziness in Congress, where things are blocked and all kinds of crazy legislation is pushed through. We can get into that. We somehow overlook that and blame someone who doesn't even have the power to do the things that we want him to do.
Yeah, and in seriousness, the system itself is so responsive to the dominant forces, and that would be the oil supply. And I think the way to reduce it without subsidizing and increasing funding for that industrial sector is to use less of that product. And this is where things like efficiency, alternatives in mode of transportation, those big infrastructure projects, which mm-hmm. would have provided, you know, non-carbon or carbon neutral forms of transportation, just to at least give people options so right. that their ride times are more strategic, they're less, they're not congesting the roadways with errant travel, so that those systems are actually not burdened with heavy loads where people are sitting idling for very long periods of time. And all of that itself was haphazardly kind of skipped over in terms of increasing public infrastructure and building more around walkable cities or cycling paths and all of that stuff to reduce dependence on fuels. And I'd say, like, in the lion's share of this country, it's spread out, and that's a factor we can't avoid. So you either build out in the further flung smaller cities, as well as providing more efficient forms of transportation. That means a longer transition, which would have included more options for hybrid vehicles. It was always a very small segment of our consumer share of automobile transport. And the stuff that's sold, in my opinion, like, it's more wasteful. They've changed emission standards and, like, changed mileage baselines, you know, trying to reach certain miles per gallon by a certain milestones in time. That's, it's either been advanced and then pulled back, or California does one thing. It's been very haphazard and inconsistent, and that the package of all of those things, much of it not well implemented or skipped over, and we go right to, okay, everybody has to replace their vehicles, we're not going to retrofit vehicles with cleaner fuels that have lesser percentages of fossil fuels. You know, all of those things were not staged and set up and slowly moved or slowly moved forward en masse. We like jumped in and let sort of really psychotic market forces decide, as in the background of the entrenched fossil fuel system that would import 8% of Russian oil and just do business like it's, you know, the 1920s all over again. you know, that's what we face to integrate and to make all that system work for everyone. You know, there just weren't the options. And now here we are with like real shocks to that whole system. And it's laid bare our dependence on really what hasn't been done to give us a way to avoid having to pay for so much fuel. And we waste it. Look at our cars. Look at our trucks. Look at the rolling coal and all these idiots. I mean, it's an awful waste how much fuel is taken for granted.
Yeah, and just the fact that we are so used to, as you were saying, these inefficient methods, these polluting methods. Anybody who fights against that is deemed the enemy. They're deemed the problem. The people who are trying to fix this, you know, trains are a perfect example. The carbon footprint of trains is so much less than both automobiles and airplanes, and we seem to just ignore that. We seem to just not give that the credit that it deserves. Look at this study a few years ago. This was something that they did in Europe, independent research to assess the CO2 per passenger that was produced by the Eurostar between London and Paris versus that emitted by a passenger on a London-Paris flight. The research looked at actual Eurostar passenger loadings, actual Eurostar power consumption, the way Eurostar's electricity is generated, actual aircraft loadings, actual aircraft fuel consumption, and so on. The conclusion was remarkable. Taking the train to Paris instead of flying cuts CO2 emissions per passenger by a staggering 90%. Yeah. And that comes from the website seat61.com, which is a great source of information all about trains and things like that. But it's true in this country as well. If you take the train, say, from New York to D.C., you are basically polluting a lot less than if you take a plane or if you drive, period. And that's true pretty much anywhere in the country. We should be building trains everywhere. We should be having this much more environmentally friendly method of transportation. This is something Biden supports. He's attacked for that, too. And then he's attacked when it doesn't go through because Congress and local state legislatures and governors block it. You know, we've seen this time and time again, the idiocy of these local governments that don't want fuel-efficient transportation. They want to continue polluting. Why? Because it brings jobs. As if other methods won't bring jobs. There'll be different jobs, different things to do, just not polluting as much. Yet they're in love with the pollution.
No, they want to sell the gallons. No, every day. Like the pump just keeps pumping. Mm-hmm. Like it's about the gallons out the door. You make it more fuel efficient, they don't get to move as many gallons. You stop relying on it, you switch over, you switch away, you go you try other kinds of blending techniques, and it's just less crude for them, which is their pipeline systems, their entire infrastructure was built around that, and trying to divert from that in any way, it just challenges what entrenched system they're gonna go for. Is, you know, anything else would be more work, and it's awful to handle. I mean, I think about the chemicals in gasoline, like just being on the highway, the gases and particulates, or filling it up yourself, you're around benzenes. It's really awful stuff, and we do fundraisers for everybody in their cancer treatments, and we sit around and wonder why things aren't better.
Yeah, this is why. This is one of the major reasons, and yet we just keep simplistically pointing to the person in charge and saying, it's your fault, we have no responsibility whatsoever. And, you know, people do this on the left and the right. It's a sickness, and it's a way of evading responsibility and a way of just not being a part of the actual conversation and the search for solutions.
Well, they turn against government because they're told lies about it. It's efficacy or usefulness. They're distrustful of one another, and it goes towards apathy. It's inaction, apathy, and self-interest and greed. Mm-hmm. The tendency towards accumulation of wealth and the conspicuous display of it, that kind of valuing that as a worthwhile pursuit or the height of our culture to laud the wealthy and the well-heeled and power and all of that instead of the health and well-being of your community begets this kind of thing. And it's exploited. It's been exploited by international government in many cases, as we're seeing, and it is fueling more and more disintegration of our country as we know it.
But you see how it benefits the wealthy, yet the middle class continues to vote for them, continues to vote for this, because they're under the illusion that somehow it's going to benefit them in the long run to support these people who are making out like bandits, who don't care about them at all. And I, you know, a part of that is the poor messaging from Democrats who can't seem to figure out how to connect with people. But if you just look at the actual facts and figures and the environment and the technology, you should be able to get there on your own without their help and realize that, you know, a better world is possible. You don't have to be like this. We don't have to be throwing money into fossil fuels. We don't have to be enslaved to that. We can be living in a much better place.
Yeah, so, I agree. I think that there is a networking class that is asleep at the wheel. They are on autopilot and need to stop self-driving.
Well, it's you know, regarding the Democrats, they just they seem to fall victim to this more than anybody, where they look at polls, they look at the numbers, and they convince themselves that they're doing it wrong, so they have to do it a different way, which turns out to be really the wrong way to reach out to people. This latest thing where, you know, Biden has this 70% of people say he's not doing the right thing for the economy, and we're treating that as if that's a monolithic mass of people saying the same thing. But no, it's actually lots of people saying very different things. You know, what we're saying right now, you know, as far as not investing enough into green energy, that's a criticism of Biden, too. It's not his fault, but it's still a criticism. Is he doing enough? No, he's not doing enough because his hands are tied. So he can't do enough. But yet, that criticism counts as part of the 70%. So it makes it seem like 70% of the people are out there with pitchforks saying, got to get rid of this guy. When in actuality, it's everybody in the country is dissatisfied for one reason or another. And that distinction isn't made. So you get the impression that, you know, the guy is completely incompetent. I'm sick of people who are basically pointing out the fact that he's 79, when what, Trump is 77. and age didn't seem to be brought up nearly as much with him. You know, the important thing is not how quickly you speak or how loudly you can shout. You know, the guy rides a bicycle, for God's sake, that's something. But it's the decisions he does make, the people he appoints. Are they in the right direction? And if they are, then that's a direction you want to continue going in. I said last week, progressives, lots of times, don't seem to realize that voting progressive isn't the way to make the country progressive. And that might seem like a contradiction, but when you look at the election results and you see that when it's left up to people on the left side, the Democrats for the most part, they don't tend to elect progressives. New York City is a perfect example of that. They voted for an ex-cop over progressive candidates. So what's the solution? Continue putting progressive candidates out there and losing, or realizing what the populace wants, going with that and pushing for a progressive agenda within that? And then years down the road, progressive candidates will win. That's the only way. Otherwise, you get right-wing Republicans, and we're in the situation we're in right now, which is terrible.
I even suggest that, like, progressives can still lead, can have their views, but still navigate that system and vote and behave in ways without being attacked by their constituents and communicate as their leader, as someone who they've entrusted, that I need to do this because this is the overall direction, that this is how we are going to have a strategic a position where we can have more influence and do the appropriate kinds of measures, and instead of trying to make it into some kind of campaign that you're only going to get a fraction of support for anyway.
Yeah.
It's not about the campaign. It's about the electorate, the people that you're representing,
and you know,
en masse.
The moderate Democrats need to welcome that into their camp a lot more than they've been doing. No question about that. But seriously, you know, if you're running, let's say, you know, a green candidate in an important election, like, you know, something for governor that's you know, close, or even president, you know, you're not going to win. You know, that's not going to, the only thing you can hope for is that you have a strong enough showing so that people say, oh, you know, there's something to be, you know, to be noticed. But it could wind up pivoting the election into a different direction, one that none of us want, except for the people, obviously, that vote for it. So, you know, that's something that you can say, but that's, that's saying you can't basically run based on your ideals. And you know what? That's true. You can't, because you won't win. You have to make compromises. And that's something a lot of us seem to have forgotten how to do. I make compromises every damn day. You don't always get what you want. But the only way to move in that direction is to get some of what you want.
Yeah, you vote as progressively as you can, but it doesn't make you any less passionate about those particular issues. And you could even campaign for somebody and then vote practically when it comes down to your primary or your general election. And for me, it's like, this is like a core thing, because the very first experience I had voting was at a caucus. I went one way, and then I was sitting around and I was told, hey, you know, you should go this way. And it mattered in that moment, and it gained some support in an ever so small way as it built up through the system that is the Democratic caucus.
Yeah, you didn't dig
however,
in your heels.
However you navigate, yeah, you got to relent. And if you're around people that you're more or less affiliating with, I don't know, whatever party you're in, or if you're independent, you know, we need all hands on deck. So yeah, if you're a reformed Republican or immature independent, we're interested in participation here in America.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, don't get me wrong, in Congress, in every forum that you have access to, if you're progressive, you be as loud a progressive as you possibly can. You do not back down on what you believe in. But when it comes down to, are we going to win or are we going to lose? And I mean the entire Democratic Party. That's when you have to ask yourself a question. Does this have a good chance of winning? And if you know it's not going to win, then you have to back whatever it is that prevents the real evil from taking over.
Yes.
And you know what I mean by the real evil? I'm talking about, you know, getting rid of abortion rights, getting rid of gay marriage, getting rid of so many of the things, civil rights. The list goes on and on and on. It's a nightmare scenario facing us that the majority of this country does not want. The real majority of this country does not want it, but they are powerless to prevent it because of the way the system is set up, because of the way the Republicans played the system. They know what they're doing. I will give them credit for that. They know what they're doing. They're evil as hell, but they know how to play the game.
Yeah, and don't let their campaigns and ads and lies, like characterizations, be how we're defined. Like, I think that all of those issues you mentioned are things that are being dredged up and something that the Democrats are labeled and in like a very in kind of a misdirected or like you said, manipulative way, where those issues are what are driving people to a sort of a frenzy of hysteria about people that they fear or things that they don't understand that are not a part of their world. And in large part, just to drive misnomers and things that just you can't actually back up, and they're normal. They're like things that are just who people are, and it's being turned into these lightning rods that are hugely hurtful and can cause real harm. They don't care. as you said, evil.
Mm-hmm. Oh, on the subject of evil, on the subject of liars, on the subject of cheaters, on the subject of regression and horror and just negativity, our Representative Lee Zeldin, who, as you may know, is the Republican nominee for governor of New York and basically helped try to steal the 2020 election back in January of 2021. New York State Board of Elections threw out his application to get an extra ballot line for the Independence Party on Thursday because it found his campaign and submitted nearly 13,000 photocopied signatures. Yeah, submitted about 52,000 petition signatures altogether to run as Independence Party candidates, which would have been about 7,000 more than they needed to qualify. But the board, following up on an assertion that thousands of signatures were merely photocopied duplicates, threw out nearly 13,000 signatures, leaving Zeldin shy of the 45,000 minimum. Speaking of shy, he's been very shy as far as commenting on that. Haven't heard a peep from him. Talk about election fraud. Yeah.
I'm sure he hears that a lot.
I'm not surprised. In a ruling first reported by Newsday, the elections board said 12,868 were found to be invalid, leaving 39,228 valid signatures. The petition does not contain the requisite number of signatures and is invalid. Wow. Oh, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. This is how they operate. This is the kind of thing they do. They cast aspersions when they lose elections and claim it had to be some kind of fraud. But they're the ones that keep getting caught.
Well, yeah, that was the whole thing. Before January 6th completely shattered the credibility, if there was any. I think it was all about election security and all this balderdash the adversarial, the Democrats, they're not to be trusted, or that, you know, all this dredged up lies that we're finding more and more about
the
during the committee
here. Left-wing communist, all kinds of accusations that would make you laugh, you know, 30 years ago.
It was all laughable at the time, but it was used seriously. And now it's got a lot of really misinformed people in a frenzy out there. We're just seeing the echoes of it, the waves of it course through society, but they don't care either. That doesn't matter either. Mm-hmm. It's all craven power and whatever strategy they can think of that they can think they might possibly get away with, or even if they don't, they'll just say it never happened or they didn't do it. And it's so corrosive. It is that disintegration that I've been talking about. We are witnessing the spoils of people who do not take the political system seriously. They take it for their own.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of the crazy, 18 House Republicans have voted against a resolution to support Finland and Sweden joining NATO. I don't know why we need a resolution for that, but think about that. Think about the message that sends, that they're basically saying, yeah, we don't want you to join this alliance. We want to vote with Russia and keep them out. The House passed a measure, had bipartisan sponsorship, 394-18. So this isn't something that most Republicans do, but it speaks to the lunatic fringe that's in there that oftentimes does drive the dialogue.
They're compromised, man. This is just wrong. You got to make distinctions between domestic and international politics and the geopolitical situation, the things at play outside this country and how we represent ourselves nationally. It's something that I think people just, they don't quite totally understand, or they do and they're, again, compromised. I mean, that's so foul. This is not what we're doing right now. Sorry.
Meanwhile, today, Democratic lawmakers, including Ocasio-Cortez and a bunch of others, were arrested outside the Capitol as part of an abortion's rights protest in front of the Supreme Court. I guess it was outside the Supreme Court. Wearing specially made green bandanas with "Won't Back Down," they marched from the Capitol to the court, which had been fenced off for weeks shortly after the leak of the draft decision overturning Roe v. Wade. Within 2 minutes of their arriving, police began ordering them to cease and desist. Instead, they sat on the street and were one by one let off by officers as they chanted, "The people united will never be defeated." Why can't you stand in front of the Supreme Court to voice your displeasure? Within 2 minutes, you're told to stop. This sounds like Russia. It sounds like what's going on in Moscow now, if you dare to oppose what Putin does. That's nuts. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, basically, as I said, was one of the people who was quickly arrested. U.S. Capitol Police sent out this tweet, and I guess this is how we get quotes from them. "Demonstrators are starting to block First Street Northeast. It is against the law to block traffic, so officers are going to give our standard 3 warnings before they start making arrests." Where was that on January 6th? Well, I mean, they were overwhelmed.
Yeah, tell me more about this standard.
Yeah, they simply weren't prepared for what happened then, weren't given the backup that they needed. So,
and have there been any arrests made in that failing?
Yes.
Back then? No? Yes? Is it in the works? Is something happening?
Ilhan Omar was also arrested. Barbara Lee of California. Jackie Speier of California. Carolyn Maloney of New York.
Those are some solid reps there.
Uh-huh.
That's a good bench.
That's what you have to do, though. You have to speak up. You have to put yourself on the line, whether you're an elected official or not, to stand up for what you believe in. That is absolutely true. And what they did, it's a marked contrast to the thuggery of January 6th, to basically trying to take over by force, as opposed to standing up for your beliefs and paying the price for it, for chanting, for showing up.
And they can afford to go through that process.
Yeah, a lot of people can't. I know.
A lot of people.
But there's other ways.
You expect to go out there and get hit by beanbags and choke on tear gas. You know, they really cannot afford to be out there like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if people that are elected show up and show out and do that work, that's to be lauded.
Right. I mean, but there's other things that everybody can do. You don't necessarily have the ability to show up there.
Yes.
But you do have the ability to not shut up about it. And, to basically make it a thing and never accept it as normal, because it's not. It's wrong. It's a huge step in the wrong direction. One of many huge steps in the wrong direction.
We have a lot more tools these days.
Going back to my original point, if we continue to simply point the finger at Biden and say he's the cause of all the problems, you're being overly simplistic, and you're guaranteeing that there will be more of the horrors that we're seeing right now with regards to Supreme Court rulings in the future, because whatever power we might have now, which is definitely not enough power than what we feel we deserve, we'll have even less, much, much less. And it'll get to the point where you won't even be able to get it back, because they will have controlled the entire electoral process. They'll control all the bodies of government on the local scene. There won't be a way other than, sheer revolution and starting over again. There won't be a way through democratic means in the system that they build.
Yeah, I can feel where you're coming from, because especially with the judiciary, there's that feeling through the judiciary and the Senate. They're scrambling. They're feeling threatened. They're feeling like their kingmaker or next candidate is potentially going to have some explaining to do and not going to be perhaps as well equipped to be out there running for a political office.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really have any other plans, and they have a whole lot of explaining to do, because there's going to be a lot of questions when debates come around and when there's town halls, people, constituents saying, where is some of the policies? Where is your platform taking us?
Right.
And what have you taken away from my family by not working with the other side and not, really ruling on cases, in favor, in light of the law, that kind of stuff. And I don't know. There are all of these people who maybe didn't speak up and who are still in politics trying to maneuver and aid this seditionist, traitorous wing of our government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is and a substantial wing.
Political players and corporate politics, whatever it is. I mean, these PACs and CPAC.
But they are the reason why things aren't getting done, and that's not said enough. You know, just all fingers point to Biden.
But they don't want to stop, so they want to control it.
If there was a true majority in the Senate, oh my God, the things that would have been accomplished. Same thing in the House. You know, if you hadn't allowed the Supreme Court to be stacked by the Republicans, we'd be living in a different country right now. This all goes back to showing up and voting for the lesser of two evils, if you want to refer to it that way, but definitely defining it that way. Now, look, there was a good piece in the Washington Post recently, how to prevent Republicans from worming out of questions about Trump, because this is what happens all the time.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Now, on CNN, for instance, Dana Bash was interviewing Arizona Governor Doug Ducey. Here's a question she asked. Do you believe Trump's actions on January 6th or inaction should disqualify him from holding public office in the future? Okay, get your shovels ready because he's shoveling with both hands on this answer. Dana, I condemn January 6th, and I think everyone that broke the law should be held accountable. In our system, this is up to the voters on what happens next. So many people want to talk about 2024, and I want to resist that temptation to talk about hypotheticals. I think the best way for us to turn this page and to move forward as a conservative Republican Party and a country is to make sure we get the best possible people elected in 2022. And that's my focus, as well as running the state of Arizona every single day. Please don't interrupt the governor of Arizona. My God, no respect. But the question was, do you believe Trump's actions on January 6th or inaction should disqualify him from holding public office in the future? Okay, next question. If Donald Trump runs in 2024, will you support him? I think we will have options in the 2024 primary race. I am hopeful we will have options. And I want somebody who can win that general election because I believe with success in 2022, the general election is the Republican Party's for the taking. Well, as this columnist, Jennifer Rubin, said, that's simply not good enough. Not after the House January 6th Select Committee has so clearly depicted the extent to which Trump was involved in the conspiracy, both nonviolent and violent, to overturn the election. Republicans show every intention of continuing to enable the chief election denier, thereby perpetuating the threat to our democracy. Now, basically, those questions were not followed up on. Here's an example. Of follow-up questions. He didn't answer the question. Is Trump disqualified in your judgment? Have you read about or watched the January 6th committee's hearings? Why can't you render a judgment? How can voters trust you to defend democracy if you cannot rule out supporting the instigator of a coup attempt? Is seeking to procure fake electors acceptable? Should pressuring the Justice Department to just say the election was fraudulent, despite any evidence of fraud, be permissible? If Arizona's state legislature had submitted alternative phony electors contradicting Arizona voters' choice, what would you have done? Is it acceptable to urge an armed mob to march to the Capitol to stop the count of electoral votes? And what about inciting a mob against the vice president at the Capitol? Is that acceptable? Not one of these questions was asked. They all should have been. That's how you deal with these people. You don't let them just give their speech about how, oh, the voters will have their say and I'm looking forward to this. No, you don't get off the hook that easily. I'm sorry.
Yep.
But let's talk about the fist bump, because that's what's on people's minds. It's the damn fist bump. I swear to God, if I see that on TV one more time, we're going to need a new TV. CNN, over the weekend, was showing it on a loop from multiple angles. People, we know what a fist bump looks like. You don't even have to show it. We know what it looks like. Just describe it once. You don't have to show it in slow motion like it's some kind of a crime scene. And okay, so Biden went to Saudi Arabia. A lot of people thought he shouldn't do that, but then a lot of people are pressuring him to do something that'll get more fuel of, you know, fossil fuels to us. He can't win either way. So he decided to take this step. I wasn't thrilled with it, but you know what? At some point, you have to take a step. Because, you know, right now, Saudi Arabia is this evil place where, you know, murdering is okay. According to what we are privy to, you know, murdering by their leader. And even Biden called it a pariah state and that it would be treated as such. At some point, you have to take a step to try and normalize things. I'm not excusing this. I don't think this was the time. I do think the pressure that a lot of us have been putting on him to solve the economy in a global.
They're not going to stop being Saudi Arabia. Right. There are certain facts at play here.
Look, it was, you know, it was a conversation. It was a visit, whatever. You can, you know, like the fact they did it or not like the fact. It's what presidents do. They sometimes meet with people they don't see eye to eye on. Okay, so he gets out of the car and fist bumps the guy. What would have been better? Someone explain that to me. Because, you know, a warm handshake, don't think that's what was, you know, called for. A hug?
They could not do
wave at him like a schoolgirl, or
absolutely could not show a picture of him in a handshake.
Yeah,
that's antithesis.
Those of you who are freaking out over the fist bump, what is it that you want instead? I keep asking these questions about a lot of things. Like, okay, you don't want him to run in 2024. Who do you want to run instead that can win? You know, every bit of information we want to hear. You know, if you have alternatives, by all means, put them forward. But this is just insane. This fascination with how he greeted somebody, to me, you know, and some people view fist bumps in a totally different way, but to me, that's the quickest way you can acknowledge somebody's presence. You know, there's the least amount of touching. It's done. It's over. It's a fist, for God's sake. You're showing your fist to the other people. Yeah, I know there's other social meanings to it, but
it can be both warm and cold.
Yeah, I think, you know, for a 79-year-old, it wasn't that warm. I really don't. And, you know, I saw it happen. Didn't even move me. But, boy, the media's obsession with this. It's, you know, don't ever tell me the liberal media just swallows everything that the Democratic Party tells it. This is indication of how they don't. And I guess that's a good thing, but boy, they're dumb. They focus on completely the wrong things. Damn fist bump. Seriously, what would you have done differently?
Yeah, cable news is a bit lost.
I guess you could just not, you know, make any kind of contact, but that would have seemed weird and awkward, and he would have gotten all kinds of crap for that.
Didn't they do the foot shake like soccer teams? Didn't they do like a little like thing that where you kick ankles? You know,
maybe
was that ever a thing?
I can't imagine Biden.
Maybe
doing
early 2020 or.
Anyway, gas prices are going down. Look, when they hit $3 again, you gonna give the guy a break then, or you'll find something else to bitch about. It's just silly. It's self-destructive. We could be doing so much more. This happens every time. And I guarantee you, if Bernie Sanders was in power right now, we'd be doing the exact same thing. We'd be pointing out every single thing he did wrong and saying how he didn't do enough. And now he's not a real liberal, et cetera, et cetera. My God, do we ever learn? All right.
I hope when we're building semiconductor factories that they're, you know, clean and sustainable and stuff, and you know that's important. How come you can't do both of some of these things, you know, like have transportation, have energy, have really diversified industry or job markets or, you know, social programs? I mean, these, you mentioned Bernie, and it's just, you know, the system does have to be functional to a certain degree to actually table some of these ideas and work them into something that is a law and benefits us. And I just think we have been suffering through a very long period of lack of responsiveness, maybe not so much on health crises, but certainly after the fact with health crises, but many other things have taken a back seat, and it's taking a very long time to get back on track.
We have one more story to focus on. This is in New York State, upstate, in fact. The town of Potsdam has passed an abortion rights resolution, and the only man on the board is the only dissenter. Yeah. A town councilor, the only man on a 5-person board, otherwise comprised of women, voted against a resolution urging federal officials to codify for rights to abortion. Resolution passed 4-1 during the Potsdam Town Board's Tuesday night monthly meeting. That was last week. It is in response to the Supreme Court's June 24th ruling in the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case that overturned the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision. Roe held that the 14th Amendment's due process clause provided a fundamental right to privacy, which protected a pregnant person's right to an abortion. The town board's resolution calls for safe and legal access to abortion up to the point of fetal viability. Viability is determined by a medical professional, but it's generally around 24 weeks of gestation. After town supervisor Ann Carville read the resolution, Councillor Tony Kennedy offered to move it to a vote. That's Tony with an I. And Councillor Alyssa Hardiman seconded the motion. After saying he's not a politician, Councillor Marty Miller went on to say, "I guess tonight I'm the voice for the ones who are never going to see life because of this. You're taking something that's got a heartbeat and you're never allowing it to live what we're living. I don't see it," he said. The Times on Monday, what Times is this? This is, you know what? This is coming from the Watertown Daily Times. That's what it is. Okay. Printed in such microscopic print. The Times on Wednesday morning reached out to Mr. Miller to clarify what he meant by heartbeat. "I'm not a doctor," he said. "There is actually a heartbeat after 3 to 4 weeks of pregnancy," he said over the phone. The term heartbeat is controversial within abortion debates. An anti-abortion argument is that a heartbeat can be detected at 6 weeks of gestation, which is still the embryonic stage. Heartbeat is often used as a legal term rather than a medical term. States including Georgia, Ohio, South Carolina, and Iowa have so-called heartbeat law, heartbeat bills banning abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, but judges under Roe had blocked them. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists in a factcheck.org article says that what is interpreted as a heartbeat is actually electrically induced flickering of a portion of the fetal tissue that will become the heart as the embryo develops. Thus, ACOG, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, does not use the term heartbeat to describe these legislative bans on abortion because it is misleading language, out of step with the anatomical and clinical realities of that stage of pregnancy.
So it's not actually pumping blood.
No, it's not a heart. But what do they know? They're doctors.
They're babies experts.
Yeah. Basically, what doctors and scientists say that an audible heartbeat can't be detected with a stethoscope until around 20 to 22 weeks, not six. So, you know, it's just typical of getting the facts wrong, spreading lies, and having men decide what women should do with their own bodies. Not that this guy won. You know, he was outvoted 4-1, but that's not the composition of our most powerful branches of government, unfortunately. And it's not the composition of the Supreme Court. So we have a lot of work to do. A lot ahead of us.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. There's so much to be said. And thanks for listening. I really enjoy trying to sum it all up. I, more often than not, put my foot proverbially in my mouth.
Really?
But
you think so?
Yeah, I'm terrible. I, you know, and mostly in like forced social settings, you know, like making pleasant conversation sometimes.
Shaking hands. You know what's better than shaking hands?
Fist greetings.
Bump. No,
yeah.
A fist. Let's do a fist bump because it's so trivial. You barely touch the person. You can walk away immediately.
But
handshake, they can hold on to you.
And I always think my jokes are funnier. I mean, we all do, but it's like, at least I try material. But at the same time, I'm like, why did I say that? Why am I even talking? I should just
you
sip,
say that. I thought
sip
people,
my drink.
I thought people said that to you.
No, it's me talking to myself. I have my own, you know, I'm my own worst critic, that kind of thing. So you know, I hope
someone has to be.
Ears have stopped bleeding and, you know, they get on with their day.
Well, Finn is up next, so that's the perfect healing for your ears.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that. We'll be back next week. Another action-packed edition of Off the Wall. Write to us, otw@2600.com, and please cement your dial to either 90.1 or 107.3 and keep listening to WUSB. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
strangest dream I ever dreamed before. I dreamed the world had all agreed to put an end to war. I dreamed I saw a mighty room. The room was filled with men, and the paper they were signing said they'd never fight again. And when the papers all were signed and a million copies made, they all joined hands and bowed their heads, and grateful prayers were prayed. And the people in the streets below were dancing round and round, and guns and swords and uniforms were scattered on the ground. Strangest dream.